If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I think Mr. Nosey is one of those Mr. Men who would feel problematic nowadays. I only realised when I was reading Mr. Tickle. Definitely
very problematic.
Definitely a pre-Me Too character, that guy.
Yeah.
Relentlessly handsy on everyone all day. with no consent. I can rein it in.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we bring you a Blue Moon podcast that features a discussion about Manchester City winning a football match for the first time in 5 episodes. It followed the obligatory defeat at Anfield, of course, but you can't have everything. On today's episode, we're going to look at the talking points from the past 7 days as City finally stopped the rot with that win over Nottingham Forest. Plus, we'll cast an eye over the upcoming games with Crystal Palace and Juventus. Where should the priorities be, with automatic qualification to the Champions League last 16 hanging by a thread? Also this week, we'll hear from the former City winger Mark Kennedy as he tells us all about the highs and the lows of his 2 years at Main Road, including his part in the promotion at Blackburn and the circumstances around his departure just over a year later. And we'll catch up with Nick from the Food Bank Group to hear more about the Stop Exploiting Loyalty action that happened at Anfield on Sunday. All of that on the way, so let's get stuck in. I'm David Mooney, and to celebrate the first win in over a month, I've brought back the two guests who were on the last time City got 3 points. We've got City fan Chris Higginbottom.
Hello.
And from Sporting News, Dom Farrell.
Hello, mate. The dream team rides again.
The dream team rides again. I thought, just after the desperate need for points, I just thought, you know, any sort of superstitions, we've got to get them out of the way. So I thought we'd get you both back on.
Yeah, I do like how you were discussing earlier that maybe you were worried listeners might notice that we were getting put on together again, me and Higgy, and you've just you've fronted up. It's the sort of thing that will play well for the FSA, because the battle for next season starts now, right?
Yeah, you gotta. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't going to mention it, but yeah, we lost again. So there we are. What you've got to do basically is address these issues head on, and that's what I'm doing. Higgy, you good?
Yeah, not bad, sir. Not too bad. Can't grumble. Another 3 points. Just stacking up now, aren't they?
Yeah, well, speaking of superstitions, City go to Juventus this week, and I don't know if you remember, when they went to Turin in 2010, Roberto Mancini made the team stay an extra day because of superstition. The plane aborted a takeoff, and he was like, "Nope, that's it. You can't take a flight when the first takeoff's been aborted." He also didn't like purple kits because they were unlucky, and I think that year they had a purple training kit. So, in honour of all of that, let's have your superstitions, please. Dom, anything? Any particular superstitions?
I mean, I don't really, which is kind of weird as a Catholic educated person. I should be riddled with this sort of stuff. But to do a little bit of a City
religion
one,
superstition anyway, isn't it?
Well, this is it. But I'm lapsed, so I'm less susceptible. Anyway, I don't know. A bit of a City one would be so when City got to the 2021 Champions League final in Porto, and we'd all sort of been indoors for 18 months. Mm. I was going out to Porto to cover the game, so I got myself some new clothes because it was like, you know, I'd just basically been wearing hoodies and trackies for 18 months, and it's not really, you know, no decorum to it, is there? So yeah, I got myself a nice sort of a check shirt, just a new pair of jeans, usual stuff that I wore to the final. Obviously, that didn't go too well for City. Imagine having no holding midfielders and having to play Ilkay Gundogan there. Anyway. And then
Please tell me you've never worn them again.
Well, I'm not superstitious, so that doesn't matter. So then I wore the same clothes to the Community Shield at the start of the next season, again for work. And then after that, I decided, well, I'm not superstitious, but let's never wear these clothes to football ever again. And I haven't. And you know,
excellent.
Gone quite well so far. Since then. Yeah,
worked so far. Higgy, any superstitions yourself?
Disappointingly. For the section, no.
Are you not a superstitious player when you play or anything like that? You have to put like your left shin pad on first or anything like that?
No, nothing like that. I just tend to be a bit kind of OCD with things, quite meticulous. I'll do something in exactly the same way over and over again, but not like
you have to class do it
that as
way.
A superstition. Like if I'm doing the washing up, I will like put all the tea spoons in one little bit of the drainer and all the knives in another bit of the drainer with all the blades pointing down.
Everyone does just, that, don't they?
No, they don't, actually. It's really annoying. And like, you know, some people don't even put, you know, ladles or bowls concave side down so they all drain properly. Like, nothing worse than picking up a spoon and there's like a puddle of water that's been for like hours. Like. But yeah, no, I don't really have any superstitions. That's my one superstition, is to not have any,
yeah. Can we talk about stacking the dishwasher as well at the same time? Because
I haven't got
the cutlery has to go together, so that like all the teaspoons together, all the knives together, all the forks together, all the dessert spoons together, all that sort of stuff. Because when you come to empty it, easy to take out.
Exactly. Makes sense. Just pick up a handful, they go in their little section. None of this,
I was always under the impression that I loaded a dishwasher correctly until it became quite clear a few years ago that my wife disagreed, and we're yet to meet in the middle. But yeah, whatever.
Excellent. I did prepare. I was a bit worried that we had done superstitions at the start of a show before, and so without any context whatsoever, I did prepare the other one. Have either of you ever seen a ghost?
Is the ghost of João Cancelo knocking around with Josco Guardiola at the minute?
Couple of ghosts in our midfield of late.
Yeah, that was basically because we're going to hear from Mark Kennedy later on. He was obviously a Swindon manager recently until he was moved on, let's say. And Ian Holloway took over and then claimed that one of the reasons for the poor form was that the training ground was haunted. But no superstitions, no ghosts. Let's get into
it. It was supposed to be cursed, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, yeah.
I was actually wondering maybe our bad run was maybe the cursed, maybe it was some kind of bacterium that had finally crawled its way to the new ground and infected the place. But
no, they beat Forest, so it's all fine. Yeah, fine.
Exorcised.
Yeah, so let's talk about this week then, because Higgy, we saw it coming that City would be a little bit off the top after the Anfield game. The gap down to 9 points with the results in midweek. Have you recalibrated and reassessed what your aims and objectives are for this season? Or is the fact that Liverpool dropped points late on against Newcastle on the day that City won made you think, oh, hang on, you never know?
There were weirdly kind of reasons for, you know, reasons to be cheerful, I guess. A few green shoots at Anfield and the manner in which we lost, given that it wasn't the pace in some of us anticipated. I think it could have been a lot worse because they did miss a lot of chances. But you know, we showed a bit of backbone. Dealt with a lot of real threats pretty well, like Ake on Salah. You know, there were some good signs there. And it's all very well saying Liverpool missed a load of chances. Part of our issue is that, you know, we've had really good spells in games, missed a lot of chances, and then end up getting punished for that. So I'm sort of hopeful in terms of us arresting the steep decline that we're in. But in terms of actually challenging for the title, it's going to take another couple of cataclysmic Liverpool results while we carry on winning for me to think anything like that. And I don't really think that's going to happen. It's probably going to be more the other way around, looking at the games that we've got coming up. And the injuries that continue to dog us. I think Aki's out again, isn't he, with a hamstring? So that's fairly, you know, mid to long term. Probably looking at 6 weeks. I don't know about bad the tear is. I don't know if you know anything on that, Dom.
I don't know, but it was telling that Guardiola came to the press conference afterwards and said, "It looks like it could be a little bit longer for Nathan because he's usually studiously goes, I don't know, I have to speak to the doctor." So if he comes in and goes, he's going to be out for a while. Before,
get the black cap, yeah.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Before this conversation with the doctor that I'm not sure ever really happens, and it's just a bit of a brush off for a journalist in the room to get. But yeah, the fact that straight away he's going, yeah, that'll be a while. Cause it wasn't even like Ake went off early in the game and they've had time to assess it and then he comes in after. It was like last 15 minutes, wasn't it? So yeah, that is a real blow because he's excellent, isn't he?
Yeah.
Changes the whole dynamic of the team, yeah.
Yeah. Higgy said green shoots in the way that they lost at Anfield, Dom. And obviously they beat Forest in quite convincing circumstances in the end. What did you want to see from the team in these two games? And did you get to see it?
Yeah, the green shoots were surprising after the post-apocalyptic wasteland of the first 20 minutes. I mean, that wasn't...
wasn't an easy watch, was it?
Turns out you can cultivate, you know, the radioactive ground that was there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Have you seen how that thing David Attenborough did a while ago about like how green Chernobyl is now? Anyway, probably a little off topic. I thought the big positive from Anfield, from a City point of view, was how they really stuck at it and were dogged. And we'll move on to talk about how important he is later on and like his defensive qualities. But I think Diaz brings an awful lot to the team in many, many aspects. And I think he was part of the reason they didn't completely go under in the first half. And then, yeah. People, you know, the team was packed with players who wanted the ball, who kept wanting to try to string passes together, get a foothold in the game. But I do think to an extent that the team Guardiola picked was a bit like sending men out to the gallows, because I get that he wanted to go with like as much control as you can possibly get, but I just looked at that 11 when it came out and thought, how are they going to get themselves up the pitch? And again, I know we can't be too critical of team selections at the moment, because it's not just like the players who are injured. Like he said last night that Akanji's been playing with an injury for about 2 months, and that, I don't think that surprises anybody. But yeah, it's not just the players who are cut and dry, absent with something. Yeah, it is also like the various states of disrepair people are getting wheeled out in now. It's probably fair that De Bruyne didn't start Anfield, given they're taking a softly approach. But you look at how De Bruyne and Grealish and Doku all played in midweek. Surely
the difference as well.
One of them. Even if, say, it was just Doku on the wing and then Nunes in the middle as more of a bit more of a presence, it was so hard for them to get up the pitch. And then that creates issues with Haaland being isolated, and obviously, you know, people will sort of get in his case about how effective he is or otherwise in games. But I don't think Haaland had his best game against Forest, but there was just so much more room because there were other attacking threats, and you can't...
He's able to get involved a bit more, wasn't he?
Yeah, you can't at all envisage Haaland having the involvement he had in Doku's goal against Forest in any game where the team that went out Anfield went out. So I think a lot of City fans would have shaken hands on a 2-0 defeat given the circumstances going into Anfield, and they acquitted themselves well to the extent they were just getting towards the business end of the game, being 1-0 and it being a bit twitchy before the penalty happened. So yeah, I think if I was to be overly critical, I'd like to have seen a bit more of what they did in terms of personnel and just the natural consequences of that they got against Forest. I'd have liked to see just a little bit more boldness in that regard at Anfield and see where it had gone. I expect they'd probably have still lost.
Mm. Yeah, I think you're right though about Diaz. The difference with Diaz and the leadership qualities, that's what was just absolutely screaming in the slew of defeats preceding the Liverpool one, the encouraging one. It's just there's no leaders there, like nobody to get a grip. Gundo's too, well, kind of an unassuming character, and probably too knackered to be vocal and lead. Kev, when he's about, when he comes on late, he's kind of cuts a frustrated figure. Diaz brings that leadership, and Aki brings like a calm assuredness to him. What really pissed me off about, I just wanted to mention this before it slips out of my mind, but what really pissed me off about the Liverpool game was Haaland and Akanji being so jovial with the opposition, like when we're losing. Like, it's not a good look, that, lads.
See, I mean, that sort of stuff has never really bothered me.
But you've got to be aggressive to be in the correct mindset, and that is not being in the correct mindset for me. I'm not as nice to people I play five-a-side with in a nothing game on a Monday night or Tuesday night, and I like those people. These are people that are trying to take your crown away, and you're just like, I know you can be fraternal like with your fellow professionals, but have some respect for the fans. Like, don't be doing that on the pitch. At least look a bit meaner about it.
But is there also an element that's the, if the City players are all walking around looking like morose and jaundiced at the moment, you know, Haaland is always someone that likes to get involved in like daft spats with whoever's marking him. And the one at Anfield, I think, was with Szoboszlai, who I believe he will have played with at Salzburg. And all the Red Bull teams become one massive big drinks can. But anyway, I think they played together. But
backwashing,
taurine washing. I think there's maybe an element of they're trying to show, look, we are still who we are. You know, if Haaland and, I mean, not, I mean, Akanji's probably going around just shouting mathematical equations to people, isn't he? But
square it.
get to the root of the problem. I take it more as that. I appreciate this is probably one of those situations where, through sort of being a journalist for such a long time, I've lost touch with the common man and all that. And yeah, I don't feel the need to see footballers looking devastated when they've lost a football match. If City players are acting how you'd expect them to act, there's maybe a little bit of defiance within that if you squint hard enough.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too aggro about it, but it was just a little bit too much. Like, I don't want you to be, you know, perma frown and like forcing it, but just for me, there's a required level of aggression, and it wasn't showing. What? And then after the game, it's like people posting old pictures of trophies and stuff. It's like, yeah. Like,
that was a bit weird.
The pass now, yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know if Pep's told him to do that after his.
I was going to say, what do you think of his six fingers thing?
He's entitled to do that. You know, he's a bit of an oddball, and who am I to question? Well, I've just been questioning Haaland and Akanji, but I kind of, you know, Pep can get away with it. It was a bit weird, a little bit cringe. It was my honest initial reaction. I was like, oh God. And I also found it a little bit cringy the way he was saying, I didn't expect Anfield to say that. It's like, what are they? They're not just a lot of normal football fans. They're just going to give you, just going to be really polite to you, are they? Like, it's called sarcasm, Pep. They're having a laugh at your expense. Like, you know.
Anfield gets to him, though, doesn't it, in a way that no other stadium does. So yeah. I think he knew exactly that. That's what, I think he expected fully that from Anfield.
Yeah, I think that was his attempt at having a dig at Liverpool fans. But as we've talked about before, sometimes his in the middle of his kind of press conference word salad, his jokes sometimes don't land. But yeah, so I thought when he did it to the fans, I thought that was quite funny. Then when he started walking towards City fans at the end doing it, it was like, rein it in a bit. I was like, that feels a bit Mourinho. But then having said that, that gave him the opportunity to have it brought up at the press conference and go, yeah, it was a bit Jose. He won three, I won six. Which meant a lot. Do you know what? Fair enough. I think
we're the same, but I'm better.
Yeah, I mean,
more equal.
Obviously, I mean, I don't want to go over old ground of like the sort of the state of his nose and head after the Feyenoord game, which was, you know, a little bit disturbing, I thought. But it's a very easy narrative to sell and a good story to tell that, oh, Pep's cracking up. Ex-manager is cracking up. It's, you know, it was Benitez, it was, you know, over the years and all the rest of it. But
he's like this when they're winning as well, though. So
yeah, absolutely. I did actually say that to a mate who's not a City fan. He let me see on WhatsApp going, oh, he's completely lost it. It's like, he's at this level of like, on looking on the edge all the time. It's just how he gets through 90 minutes of a football match. And I think where it's better to judge is if you look at like the totality of his press conferences through this spell, which, you know, that I have kind of found fascinating. He's speaking with an awful lot of clarity. It's not like he's saying mad old nonsense. Well, not any more than usual, but he seems very, very clear-headed about the situation and what he wants to do. The only exception, I think, would be was the press conference after Feyenoord, but I think you're allowed to sound like you've lost the plot when you've let in three goals in 15 minutes in a game that was won. I think the idea that he's losing it is like, yeah, that's a cool narrative for TalkSport or whatever, but it's not what's going on.
Yeah. The positive from the other side of the week with the Forest game, we talked, Higgy, you were talking about Haaland earlier on, and we talked about in so many shows recently about how if Haaland isn't scoring, he's not really involved, and if Haaland isn't scoring, then City aren't really scoring. Bernardo, De Bruyne, Doku with the goals, that's an encouraging sign as well, isn't it? The fact that they've scored three goals and Haaland wasn't one of the scorers.
Yeah. And, you know, he assisted Doku as well. It's just, it was encouraging all round, really. And apart from the sort of defensive frailties are still apparent. But I think you've just got to take that on the chin. When we're winning titles, there's many a chance that goes begging and you think, oh, but for this, but for that. It's all part of the context of that particular match, isn't it?
Some nice finishes in there as well. Doku and De Bruyne, pretty good finishes.
Yeah, and Doku especially needed that. I mean, there's so many times where you just berate him because he hasn't got that end product. I think Jack Gorn put it pretty well, didn't he, after the Liverpool game. He said he was affecting the game without affecting it, and that kind of sums him up. He's just skinned three people. He's amazing. And that, yeah, but what happened? Nothing. But so for him to actually just find that finish, and it's a fairly natural finish, isn't that, for him in that position as a tricky winger cutting inside. That should be happening more often, you would feel. But yeah, next up, Savinho.
Is Doku's new dance a young person thing I should know about? Because
which one?
Last season he hit the gritty. That's what he was doing. He was hitting the gritty. And so there's various NFL players who do this, and we've got an article at work like explaining it. Whenever someone does the celebration, you update it so it ends up on Google and people read it. And when Doku scored last night, I was like, best update the gritty article, and it was a new dance.
He had about six celebrations for that goal. Went off for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, well also he was this is where like two players maybe sort of mindsets clash a bit. He was getting into his flow and then Diaz came and wrapped him in a big Ruben's Instagram man hug and he's like, "Do you mind? I was dropping some moves." Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course he celebrated it quite hard, Higgy, because he made it 3-0 with about 15 minutes to go. That's safety in anyone's book, isn't it? So
well, yeah, as we know.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's just before we move on from Anfield, let's talk about that, because on last week's show we heard from Nick from the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. They were working with the Football Supporters Association and with various other fan groups to take part in a demonstration of solidarity ahead of last weekend's game. I caught up with them this week to find out how it all went.
We're just one group of dozens and dozens across the country who were all experiencing, you know, similar issues with regards to ticket pricing, erosion of concessions, but not just that, really. I think it, as we're seeing a lot with various issues, including some of the stuff we saw about people in Barcelona shirts in the away end on Sunday, it's about generally, like, it feels like the future of the game, to be honest, at this point, a bit of an existential crisis for kind of the direction of travel that football's going in. But we were delighted to, honestly delighted, and I mean that, to work with Scousers. Liverpool fans reached out to us, an 1894 group, City's Atmosphere group, to see if we could do something before the game. And then we got tickets for the match, and we went up and was a little bit nervous. We didn't quite know how it was going to go down, but absolutely incredible, mate. There was easily over 100 people there at one point, and there was plenty of City fans there, Pitt fans I didn't know. Tons of Liverpool fans. You know, they've been very organised on stuff like this in the past, but there's no reason we should leave it all down to them. And it was for that reason that I also asked United fans to get involved, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners have seen the action from outside Old Trafford against Everton, and that was huge. And just look at the coverage that we got. You know, it was on all sorts of radio stations. It's on all sorts of it was printed back covers of The Independent and The Daily Mail, surprisingly.
Don't forget podcasts.
Mate, it all started on the podcast. The reason I even felt confident talking to some of these guys was because of speaking to you and the support Blue Moon's given us over the time. But yeah, it was honestly, it was uplifting before the game. I was generally very, very happy. There was absolutely no grief for all, like I say, the animosity and everything that has been talked about with City and Liverpool. Absolutely zero grief, no issues. All of us understand. It's a shared struggle at the moment. I want to be there in 20 years' time with kids of my own or nephews, nieces, whatever, slacking off scousers from the stands. I want to be able to be there. I want to continue the generational link that my dad and his parents and that before him gave to him going to Main Road. Mm.
One of the striking images, I think, from the weekend is the fact that the Stop Exploiting Loyalty banner was held across the home and away end at Anfield, which, I mean, how much coordination did that take?
Oh, my word. There was so many times that I didn't think it was going to happen. I mean, I even got a message a few days earlier saying from a Liverpool fan saying, lad, we've lost our banner. Because there was one in the Kop as well, and that was huge for it to be in the Kop and with City fans, you know, two at the same time. It was massive. Yeah, that was it did take a lot of coordination. And do you know what, we had support from Fair Play Liverpool stadium staff, stewarding and everything. Their SLO, support liaison officer, understood that, look, one, this is a freedom of speech issue. And we should be able to say these things as supporters. There's no inflammatory language, no bigotry, no hatred or anything and stuff like that. It was handed over to me before the game. We were all planning to do it just for 1 minute, 2 minutes, about 20 to 4 before kickoff. And you know what? City fans, I didn't have a clue who it was, because we didn't know where it was going to exactly be, where I was going to get the banner thrown over to me. It was handed over. It's 10 metres long, so that's going across a lot of fans, across two rows. Every single fan that asked me what was this, did they not, what's it about, I explained it to them, and they were completely on board. We were meant to be doing it for a minute or 2 minutes just to get a picture. We stood up for 20 minutes, and we did it right through You'll Never Walk Alone, which a lot of people said, you're never going to get that to happen because it's too inflammatory. There's too much animosity. But no, it's absolute proof that it's not football supporters. We understand proper football fans. You go to the games, we get it, you know, and the ones who've been priced out, we get it. So that was a massive statement. I've got so much thanks and support from all these City fans, all the people who shared the news, because some of the fans did know exactly what was going on. They'd seen it in the news, they'd seen it on your podcast, heard about it, they spoke to me about it beforehand. And I think it's massively important that we keep educating, we keep talking about these issues. You know, we just seen what United did last week, and that made the whole situation even worse. And this is going to continue. This is, you know, before they got the £30 away cap introduced, it took 3 years, I've been told, for that campaign. We are still in the education process, but things are still going to keep going. Get involved. Please share the messages online. The clubs need to listen, and this is the issue. Clubs aren't listening, especially ours, unfortunately.
I was going to ask what's next, because obviously that's one action or one set of action across a couple of games over one weekend. And if that's it, then nothing kind of comes of it. So what's the plans now for the next few weeks, next few years?
Yeah, like I say, keep up the education part of it. I think you're going to see that banner a lot more at City Stadium. I think that's fair to say. Hopefully the club respond to our emails this time when we ask them to take it in the ground and give them security certificates, because we should be allowed to express freedom of speech as supporters. We should be allowed to express our voices. But yeah, there's going to be more interaction, and more importantly, there's going to be more interaction between different supporter groups. We can hate each other on the pitch and even in the stands to an extent, but you know, we are going to get, and we do get so much done when we stand together. We saw what happened in European Super League. Within 48 hours, the whole thing was done and dusted because of fan pressure, fan power. There's a lot more. We're more powerful than they lead us to believe. So just keep aware, keep looking out. And if you ever do say anything on our socials at MCFC Food Bank or the 1894 group, etc., get involved, get in touch, ask questions. We're always there to chat. Like, this is really important. It's educational. But yeah, it's just, honestly, we, just like with the food bank, we wouldn't be able to do this without City fans.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Nick from the Food Bank Group talking to me about the Stop Exploiting Loyalty campaign. odd thing in the away end, Dom, with the fans in the Barcelona shirts. That's a bit of a strange thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there are people who will know more about this than me, and the club will have their own line on it. But anecdotally, from speaking to a fair few regular away fans, I've been told like that the makeup of the away ends does seem to have changed a bit post treble. You know, there does seem to be a lot more tickets. You know, like, I mean, I think people know that like tickets for Anfield, but I mean, for some reason, I mean, why the fuck anybody wants to go nowadays?
It's a waste of money, if you ask me. Yeah, but
they are like rocking our shit, and then yeah, lo and behold, here's like a sort of middle aged Catalan stag dude. I don't know what's going on, but yeah, from speaking to some guys who do regular aways. One of these lads was saying he spoke to a Chelsea fan who said their away ends got very similar after they won the Champions League. Like, that's a kind of a tipping point into me, the next kind of big club that you will get, you know, people that want to come along to see the European champions. Honestly, it's KC, Guardiola, see Haaland, etc. I've seen more than one person point out that the makeup of the away end at Crystal Palace at the weekend, you know, probably... With due respect to Sellers Park, a less glamorous away ground, a less glamorous fixture, there might be a lot of people that wanted to get Anfield tickets who couldn't, who are there in force and in voice at Palace. And that's only right. I mean, listen, you don't want football supporting to be exclusionary, but by its very nature, when there's only a small amount of tickets for the biggest games, and some of the people who are the loyalist and most dedicated don't get a look in, and then you see it's like that. Yeah, it looks like he's been given out for kind of a weekend away to some lads who might have been down the Beatles Museum beforehand, and you know.
But it's not just the fact that they're being given away. What particularly kind of sticks in everyone's craw, I feel, with the Anfield thing is that not only are they all obviously not City fans, but they're not trying to hide it. They've all got a different club's kit on. They're absolutely rubbing our noses in it, and added to that, they're all Barcelona, and with the top brass in the club having those connections, it just makes even... It's like...
There might not be a connection there, but
I know,
it makes the connection easier.
Visually,
to make
that's what makes it...
It's a bad look.
...more annoying, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Focusing on the Forest game then, because David got in touch on Blue Sky to say, could Chris Wood's miss be a turning point in the season? We were nearly at 1-1, having shot ourselves in the foot again, but instead almost immediately made it 2-0. Is this the sort of moment we needed to go our way to turn things around? Obviously, the team has had issues, Dom, but one of the issues has been the other team keeps scoring their chances and City keep missing them. Like, effectively, that's just karma. It's balanced out the other way around. City have scored their chances and Forest missed them.
I think the way City are still playing and just the injury issues at the moment means it's more likely to be Grandpa Simpson hat stand gif than an actual turning point, just the way things are. But yeah, and again, this sort of speaks to my earlier point about having guys with a bit more presence who are better in transitions, like Grealish, like De Bruyne, or like Doku, in the midfield. Obviously, none of those... I mean, no, Grealish kind of is, but certainly De Bruyne and Doku aren't control guys, as Pep would term it. And Grealish has been a control guy, but from playing in the forward line rather than in the middle line. They're the sort of players who you think are going to lead to more opposition chances, but they're also going to lead to more chances for yourselves. And I don't think... I mean, obviously, De Bruyne's pass was responsible for the Wood chance. And you could say that, oh, maybe that's because they're two attacking in the wide open. He just made an absolute mess of a really basic pass that he'd make in his sleep. I don't think that was like because there weren't enough personnel around the ball. So, yeah, I think they're in a position now where... One thing that struck me last night was I can't think of a time when a team like Nottingham Forest... would have come, and obviously I know they're having a really good season, but we all know how Nuno's teams play and have been successful. We've never seen a Nuno team be that expansive in attacking at the Etihad. Now, maybe that was just because City allowed them because they're easier to play through now, but I do think in this period coming up, you're going to have, you know, maybe it's Palace, not to talk them down, but you know, we've seen United come to the Etihad in previous derbies and just park it. Maybe there are going to be more open transitional games because teams want to have a go at City. It's not like the Forest one was completely authoritative. So the miss might not be a turning point, but I think the circumstances around it, if that motivates Guardiola to just to let the handbrake off a little bit because there's no point really having it on anymore, there could be some fun games where they get more joy than they would have done, say, when the alternative is to pick a control team that is just kind of maybe waiting for the inevitable.
The other positive that I wanted to ask about from the Forest game, Chris, is something a lot of people have been calling for a long time. Grealish in the middle. City have been lacking centrally. Obviously, De Bruyne's back in there and, you know, you've got Gundogan who is experienced but struggling a bit this season. What did you make of Grealish playing centrally?
Really impressed. It's almost like, shouldn't we have thought of this a lot earlier? Hasn't he kind of played there before and done really well? Isn't he a midfielder? Like, who would have thought? But yeah, it just seems like the most obvious thing. He's got every attribute that you need in that position, including experience. So yeah, more of that really suitable solution, please.
Yeah, I wondered if his dynamism, Dom, really helped Doku and Bernardo in the wide areas, because he was popping up on both sides and kind of being an option for them as well. He was really helping out Gundogan with those kind of little 5-yard passes around the corner to ease the pressure. That Gundogan in the last few weeks has looked up and not seen anyone there. he's kind of knitting everything together by being there. And I know it's only one game. I know there's this kind of limited evidence, but it seems, as Chris says, it seems like something we should see a lot more of.
Yeah, I think the thing you were saying that he does with the wingers that is actually something I think Bernardo also does quite well when he plays in that role, because you sort of because it's someone who's used to playing as a winger, they kind of know what the winger wants and knows where the winger wants him to be. I thought that was really obvious, particularly with how he linked with Doku. But yeah, he's, you know, I think back to like when he signed and Guardiola talked about how him and Cheeky were, I think he said Cheeky's in love with him because he's a guy who can slow the tempo down and control the tempo. And it's like, when you've listened to enough Guardiola press conferences, it's like, they're like sort of, you know, they're sort of bingo words. And it's like, oh, right, yeah. That. So he's always someone who's ticked those boxes. I remember he made his full debut away at Tottenham, funnily enough, a 1-0 defeat. He made playing as like a central attacking midfielder. But that was around the time Bernardo was expected to leave. Well, the annual...
Which one?
The annual festival of Bernardo Silva's off.
You may have to be a tiny bit more specific, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think this was like one of the more pronounced ones.
Bernardo wanted to leave and we lost at Spurs. Got you.
I know, yeah, yeah. any time in the decade. And maybe if Bernardo had left, maybe that's where he might spend a lot of his time. But the game after that, it became clear Bernardo was staying. Grealish played on the wing and scored against Norwich. And he's played on the wing and not scored ever since. So, I just think he's a brilliant player, and I think he's got so much about him that works in that role at City now. Obviously, through a lot of his City career, there's understanding. You know, look at all the conversation we had last season about when's Phil Foden going to get to play in the middle, all the seasons before even. There's been a lot of competition there, and it's understandable that Grealish, with his particular skill set, could do things on the left wing that others couldn't, so that's where he rested. Whereas now, when there's, well, the only position where they seem to have lots of depth is centre-half, and they're all injured. So it's not like there's a plethora of options anywhere, and I just think he makes a lot of sense. There's also, this sounds very sort of basic English football stuff, but you can underestimate what a physical presence Grealish is as well. You know, he's a strong lad, he can take care of himself. And that midfield has been full of little boys, and it's looked like little people running after big people. Gundogan's foul on Morgan Gibbs-White last night was like a sort of like, come back, big man. And just having a little bit of, having Grealish and De Bruyne in there with him rather than Rico and Bernardo, it just changes the feel of everything. I'd love to see plenty more of it. I think that's where he needs to be.
The Forest fans after that Gundogan foul were singing Same Old City Always Cheating, and I couldn't decide if pulling a player back like that is cheating, because You are breaking the rules, but you are acknowledging that you're breaking the rules by taking the yellow card.
Let's see how many teams who were playing last night at this stage have had points deductions already. That's all I'm going to say.
Chris, the goalkeepers. This is an interesting one for this week. Is Ortega the first choice now?
Well, yeah. He got picked, didn't he? I mean...
But the utter disdain that you had for my question there.
So for going all Cole Palmer on you.
Who?
But, I mean, he is until he isn't. Until he isn't.
He's 28 until he's 29 in goalkeeper terms. Is that what this is?
Struggling to give an adequate answer here. I mean, luckily there is a conversation around that, so I'll try and steer towards that than just be glib and sarcastic. But yeah, I mean, Edison is the... He said it himself, Pep, haven't he? Edison is the first choice, but there's nothing wrong with mixing it up a bit. It will recalibrate Edison's focus and ambition. Clearly that needed to happen given some of the errant behaviour that he's displayed of late. And you've got to keep people keen, haven't you? Like, yeah, sit on the bench for a bit. How do you like them apples?
Here's a comparison for you, Dom. Edison and Ortega to Guardiola is as Weaver and Nash was to Keegan.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it is, because they're both two goalies of a similar standard, and you can sort of decide to go either way. I mean, I don't think there was ever a thought that, as there is with these two, that necessarily Nash was a better shot stopper than Weaver or vice versa. Because it's the thought that Ortega does the basic goalkeeping stuff probably a little bit more competently. Not that Edison's bad in that regard, but...
But is that part of the thinking then in this week? Because if you think of the games he's anticipated, he knows City are easy to play against at the minute, so he's anticipating facing more shots. He'd anticipate facing a lot of shots at Anfield come what may. Has he just thought of this and gone, I'm going to stick the guy in who's better at saving shots?
I mean, I would hate to simplify Guardiola's thought process, but I can't see that it's anything else, really.
I think Edison's been a bit shit, I think. So he's been dropped. I don't think it's about the amount of shots he's facing. The difference between Nash and Weaver and Ortega and Edison, well, there are many, but in this context, is that it seemed to be completely arbitrary and random with Weaver and Nash. Like Weaver had said himself, hasn't he, in interviews on this podcast, he was just like completely baffled. I'd be playing really well, and he'd just say, going to start Carlo this week. And he'd be like, all right, Gaffer, well, I've been playing absolutely mint, but you're the boss kind of thing. Walking away thinking, eh? And then Nash should be playing brilliantly well, and it'd be, right, Weaves, you're in. And he'd be like, really? Okay. No rhyme or reason to it. But with this, I think there is, you know, a quite an obvious kind of discernible reason for it, in that, you know, you look like you were trying to fly to the moon at one point at Anfield. Like, was that Tottenham? There's so many mistakes to pick through, but yeah, he's had a bit of a bad spell, and it will do everybody a bit of good to rest him.
It is the parallel, actually, that Ortega and Nash were both like the dashingly handsome understudy, and they've now got the shirt.
I think there's a lot of people in the late 90s who will have a little bit of a pop for you suggesting that Weaver was not dashingly handsome.
That's fair, but yeah, he was more boyish good looks, wasn't he? Whereas Carlo Nash like didn't he actually do some modelling?
He might have done. I always think boy band, like late 90s boy band for Weaver.
I always think more like late 90s farmhand for Weaver. catalogue model for Nash. Yeah.
Of course, the only misstep in Ortega's week, after we've just heard from Nick, who was doing very much hands across the M62, was his throwing a grenade towards Merseyside in his post-match interview. It's like, can we maybe rein that in, mate? We've had a low-key 2-0 defeat here. Let's get out of town. And yeah, start slagging off Liverpool.
Is there any argument for context lost in translation there? Or?
Well, it did strike me as a very second language, and also a very sort of, you know, to do stereotypes here, why not? I mean, he started it.
Very mature way to address it.
Yeah, so it did seem like a very sort of polite-mannered German person speaking English, but nevertheless shit-talking. It was quite a delivery.
I like that. That was his biggest mistake in the week. In the week where he absolutely clattered Luis Diaz in the area.
Yeah, definitely.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
While we're lingering around the late 90s, let's move on, because as we've discussed at length this season, maybe the Forest game aside, there's been something missing in this City team when it comes to creativity. Creativity was what manager Joe Royal was looking to add to the team after promotion back in 1999, and he found it with the £1.6 million capture of Mark Kennedy from Wimbledon. This is an interview I've been trying to arrange for years, and this week it finally happened. I met up with him to chat about his time at Main Road, starting with why he made the move.
When City, obviously the famous year when they went up through the playoffs, when obviously Dickie scored the late goal and I think we saved the penalty, City tried to take me on loan that year, and obviously I was playing in the Premier League with Wimbledon, so wrongly, I think, when I look back and I was like, I'm not going to play in League One, I didn't want to do that, so that was a straight no. So as soon as they got promoted, which they did, thankfully, and huge credit to Joe and Willie for coming back in, they came back in for me, because normally with things like that, I think once you turn somebody down, once people go, you're not for me. I mean, you shouldn't cut your nose off to spite your face, but I think my own impression of that would be, if somebody turned me down once, I'd move on. So credit to Joe for that. With it being the club they are, the size of the club, it was a no-brainer, and also my own position at the time. I'd signed for Wimbledon, although we were in the Premier League. I met him out of respect originally, and I really probably shouldn't have. I was only there a month, and I went in to see the manager, and I was like, look, I've made a big mistake. You've made a big mistake. It's a dual mistake, if you like. So finding an exit strategy was really important. I just couldn't believe my excitement, I would say, more than anything, that it was City, because they're just such a huge, huge club.
What were the squad talking about at the start of that season for what they wanted to achieve? Like, you go into training every day. What was the feeling around the place as a side that was as big as City, as you say? You know, it's a big club that is a Premier League club, but is still kind of having to battle its way up.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny one, because I just don't remember anything like that. And I don't mean apologies as in it's song so long ago. I suppose in my own head, when I think about it, I signed for City because I thought we could get promoted. I certainly wasn't going to leave the Premier League to go and play in just a big team. So I would suppose there's probably a subconscious thing more than anything, that this is what we're going to do. But there was no conversations around, we have to get promoted, we have to do this, we have to do that. I mean, I suppose there's an automatic expectation at a club like City that you should be successful and should be in the Premier League.
Is there pressure with that?
Nah, because when you're young, so I think I would have been about 23, when you're young, you just don't think like that. So one of the negatives about playing football is you go from being a fan and doing something you love to doing something you love actually becoming a job, and it takes away, for me, a little bit of the fun and enjoyment and the freedom of just being. My sons are 7, 9 and 12. When they play football, they play football because they love it. When I was 23, that's all I did. But when you're 30, it's a job, it's paying bills, it's securing your future, it's having a family. I mean, I didn't have a family of kids like that, but that's what it becomes. I hated, that's a strong word, I disliked playing for Ireland a lot, and yet I was the biggest fan in the world when I was a kid. I can remember 88, where I was exactly, the bedroom I was in when Ray Houghton scores against England to win 1-0 with his header over. I remember the volley from Ronnie Whelan over. I can tell you the Russian goalie, Renat Dasayev, in goal for Russia. They're things you remember as a fan, and then all of a sudden, X amount of years later, it's a job, and I lost that love and that feeling. I loved playing football, but you miss being a fan. So I think at that age, apologies, I'm going to answer your question, it was just the freedom and the euphoria of just playing, doing what you loved every day, which was playing sport.
Do you remember your first goal?
I'm gonna. Yes, I do actually. I've a good story for you here. We played Burnley in the cup. We beat them 5-2, and I scored two. But at half time, Joel Royal gave me the biggest rollicking I've ever had in my life, and it was career changing for me because I had 3 years at Liverpool. So unlucky with injury, it was untrue. Then I chose to leave. I asked to leave. I handed in a transfer request, and I left of my own accord. Then I go to Wimbledon. What have I done? Massive mistake. Felt like people completely deceived me and were dishonest with me. So now I've had two clubs where it's not worked out for different reasons. Then we play Burnley at Main Road, and I'm the star sign and supposed to be, and I'm supposed to be a big player, and I've got a big reputation. I've come down, and Joe annihilated me at half time. But it was a bit of it was a really big moment in my life. Because in that dressing down he gave me, I quickly realised, and a lot of people don't have the intelligence, I realised I am in the last chance saloon here. It can't be I was unlucky at Liverpool, it can't be I got the season. This one's on me. So even if the manager turns out to be the biggest you know what in the world and it's the worst club ever, I have to make this work. And by the way, Joe's amazing and it's amazing. Look, and although you can always have a reason in life for things not happening, there can't be excuses. And I just thought, there can't be another. And the first two weren't excuses, but I thought that this has to work. And I got really lucky, actually, because I was playing left wing. I quit inside. I actually went to put a cross in with my right foot, and it flew in the top corner. And from that, you get confidence, and you get a spring in your step. Scored another goal from outside the box in 20 yards. We win 5-2. Ronnie Jeffson tried to kill me. Physically ran after me, so that was a compliment to myself when we played. And then the irony of that was, you've got this huge confidence. We play Sheffield United at home on the Saturday. I think we won 6-2. I scored either one or two goals, and then just kicked on from that. But it came from the conversation with Joe at halftime. So that conversation with Joe changed my career.
There's a goal of yours that I think of early in that season, away at Bolton. Do you remember it?
I do. I remember it well. It was one of the greatest weeks of my career because. Did we win? Was it 1-0?
1-0. We scored the winner.
Yeah, so, you know, it was a bit of luck. Look, it was a nice goal. It was a good goal. There's a huge element of luck to it in terms of I picked the ball up about 15 yards inside my half. And although I carried it to the edge of the box, no one actually came to me. Like, the Red Sea just opened. And if you're technically good, I don't understand why, if you're 20 yards out and you've got an opportunity to shoot, why you wouldn't shoot. So I was a player that, if I'm 20, 25 yards out and you show me the goal, I'm shooting. And trust me, I put plenty of balls in the stand, but I know I've got the ability and the capability to score. And the irony of that week was we won 1-0, so I scored a goal. I didn't mean to put it in the top left hand corner. You're just thinking of your technique, hit the target, the ball will rise, the ball will fly. So it looks better than I've played with players who would put it there and do it on purpose. I wasn't that good. That was on the Saturday. On the Tuesday, amazingly, just the best week, I scored an even better goal for Ireland against Yugoslavia in a World Cup qualifier.
What was the team like at that point that you were playing in? Because you look at that run of form. I mean, Nicky Weaver spoke to me years ago about this, and he just said, we just used to turn up at places and win, and we'd just win and win and win. And you kind of build a bit of momentum behind it. So what was it like being in that team and that dressing room when that was happening?
And the latter part of what you said is the key. The dressing room was phenomenal. The best dress. And I've been really fortunate that I can't think of a bad dressing room I've been in that just had something unique. It was, you know, people say like it was like a family. And it's a real cliche that, but it was literally like a family. I mean, ironically, I seen Nicky Weaver last night. I haven't seen Weaver for 10 years. And it was like you were training with him the day before. I seen Jeff Whitley about 6 weeks ago coming to Swindon. It was hugs and kisses. I haven't seen Jeff for years. And it was just a unique bond between players who loved each other, cared for each other.
Do you win games because of that?
In terms of your togetherness, yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah, definitely. I look, we got promoted that year because we were a very good side, but we definitely got promoted on our team spirit. There was a real unique connection within the team with each other. I hope it's not slightly controversial, not supposed to be, but there was football was different back then. There was a culture, there was a drinking culture. We used to socialise together constantly, and when we went out, it wasn't like one or two, like everybody went out. Now that can only take you so far. So, you know, the level of football today, you can't do that. You're monitored in terms of sports science and GPS and stuff like that, and everybody's training at a different level today. But back then, that was kind of what everybody did. And you know, we played hard away from the game and we walked hard within the game.
Before we get to Blackburn, let's talk about Birmingham, because it's the Friday night, it's under the lights at Main Road. Not necessarily win to be promoted, but it's like one hand on promotion with a victory. Ipswich, the third place team, were going to Charlton, the league winners, the next day. Did that play into it at all?
Yeah, and I remember specifically we went up, so I've no idea why we were celebrating like idiots. That was really poor on our part. And
so if Ipswich had dropped points at the Valley, then City were up.
But I can't understand why we were celebrating when the game's not been this the what if. And actually, am I right in saying they went and got?
Yeah, they won.
Yeah, there you go. So I think I'm guessing the assumption was, I mean, my biggest disappointment that year was not winning the league, because I think between ourselves, us three, it was neck and neck all the way, and in the end, Charlton got away from us. I think they won by 5 or 6 points, is that right? So that could have really come back to, we could have really embarrassed ourselves there. Yeah, that was poor on our part, and I remember being one of the antagonists in the director's box, jumping up and down like an idiot. I look back and cringe when I see that now. I'm just glad that the story had a happy ending.
So then you get to Ewood Park, you know, the game kicks off. How you must be confident with what the season's delivered so far, but there's pressure on the game. How do you remember that first half?
I remember the game really well, but I remember going into the game being supremely confident. And also, what helped was we didn't have to win; we needed a draw. And also, am I right in saying that Ipswich have got to go and do the business as well? So there was pressure on us, but there was so much more pressure on.
There were safety nets there.
Yeah, 100%. What I cannot believe, and I still thank God to this day for this, although we deserved to win in the end, we were so lucky it was untrue. Because I think at halftime we were 1-0 down, and they'd hit the bar three times. A lot of my friends say everything happens for a reason. I'm not a massive believer in that, but I'm kind of getting that way. I'm not a believer in karma, but I'm kind of listening to what everybody I seem to know talks about karma and things happen. And I'm not in that squad just yet. But I always remember, I think it was Matt Janssen swivelled, and it's hit the upright, and it could have went in, it could have went anywhere, and it come back straight out into Nicky Weaver's arms. And I remember thinking, you've got to be kidding me. And I think getting into half time and only being 1-0 down, having hit the bar three times, it was like, guys, what more do you need? What more do you want? Like, whoever it is out there is trying to hand you a win. It's trying to hand you promotion. Don't throw it away.
Did you know at that time, because just before City equalised, Ipswich had scored, so the positions in the table had swapped. Right. Did you know that?
Sat here now, I'm going to say no, but I'm going to guess at the time you would have heard it in the crowd. And I don't think, if you think about the life we live today, there might have been one guy with a transistor, whereas today everybody's on mobile phones, so I'm not sure that ever got to us on the pitch. I'm not. Whereas today you can hear it in the crowd, you can see everybody, you can see the lift.
People know. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure that got to us that day. I'm not sure that when I say got to us, I'm not sure it found its way to the pitch.
So obviously then there's the own goal, and then this is the City goal in my lifetime that I have celebrated more than any other, because when you made it 3-1, did you know that was it? Did you know you were going up?
Yeah, 100%. What I remember about the own goal was it Christian Daly who scored the own goal? I remember walking past, he was on the ground, and I remember patting him on the head, which is really mean, like, thank you very much, like a little school kid, which is really mean. And I'd be horrified if I seen somebody do that now, or my kids do that. I'd give them a right dressing down. And I can't remember the lad's name. There was another lad who played centre-half, Marlon Brooms. I remember him saying to me, like, it's really disrespectful. Yeah, that's really poor. I remember thinking, shit, but F you, I don't care, you know? But I also remember thinking, we're 2-1 up now, you've got to score 2 goals, and there's nothing to play for you, and we're playing for our lives. But obviously, the goal, the third goal, what I really remember about that is game over. You're not scoring 3 goals against us. And even if you score another 2, we're still promoted.
What's it like when that breaks to you in the box, and you're just like, I'm going to score this?
One thing I was always really good at was separating the moment and the crowd from myself. So when I scored a goal, somebody's about a yard off tackling me. And I say this to defenders when you're defending. If you're going to be a yard off me, you may as well be 1,000 yards. If you can't get to me, so the person tackling me is irrelevant to me because I know he can't get to me. So my only sole focus is on the ball and my technique. And because I was a technically good player, I've got the utmost confidence in that. It's a 10-yard pass. If I can't pass the ball 10 yards, keep it down, be firm, put it in the back of the net. So stuff like that I can remember quite clearly and quite well. Trust me, I'll have missed those chances before. I have. And we all have, because we're human beings, we're not robots. But in that moment, if you were to pause the game in my head and say what happens next, I would say for myself, if I have 10 of those opportunities, I'm going to score 8, the keeper might save one, and I'll put one wide. So really it should be bread and butter. It's just technique, concentration, firm, game over.
Let's looking at the Premier League season, what was different about that next year? Was it simply that this was a team that was promoted on a lot of team spirit, and in the Premier League that can only get you so far?
Yes and no. So when you look at any team that gets promoted, I don't care who you are. If you get promoted, I don't care who you are and how good you are. If you stick with the team that gets promoted from the Championship to Premier League, you're going straight back down. It's another level altogether. And even back then it was. I just felt, I look back on a lot of the signings we made, I thought they were poor. I felt there was a split in the dressing room. So you had all the players you'd got promoted and felt part of a family, and then you probably had a new group of players coming in on a lot more, I'm guessing, a lot more money. I just thought there was a split without a rift, because actually everybody got on really well. I can't remember any, he didn't get on with him and he didn't like him. There was none of that. But I thought the dressing room had just been torn apart. I don't want to say this. I don't know whether the team had lost its soul a little bit. I don't know. I think ultimately the bottom line is we had a team that weren't good enough. But guess what? I was part of that. So what I'm trying to say to you is I'm as much to blame, and there's no blame or fault or guilt, but I'm as responsible as any other player.
Teams get relegated, it happens.
100%. And look, the bottom line is we weren't good enough.
Did that make you feel sad for Joe, though, in the end? Because he's overseen City's... I mean, it started the year before you arrived, but he's overseen City's rise from the third tier, and he's lost his job at the end of that season.
So two things, yes and no. The latter part, the no, is unfortunately footballers are the most selfish people in the world. Certainly in the football world, all people care about us themselves. So on that part, I say no. But on the other side, I say yes. I thought what happened to Joe was really disappointing, and I personally felt angry and disappointed for him to be discarded. So, and I don't know what happened. Something clearly happened. You can't sack a manager for that when you look at what he's done. So I don't know this. My guess is there's a story behind the story. What it is, I've no idea. But I don't think, in my head, Joe lost his job because he got relegated. I think something else has gone on, or what it is, I don't know. Whether we can get Kevin Keegan, I don't know.
You mentioned Kevin Keegan. Did you get a chance at the start of that next season?
No, I don't like the guy. I think he's a weak man. I don't like the guy at all. And I think that of him, I'll never change my mind on that. Where I give him credit, I went to meet him to say, why are you selling me? And he told me why. And fair play to him, everything he said was spot on. I need money to invest. I can't sell anybody. I've got £2 million for you. I've got no money for everybody else. So that's really good money to invest. I'm going to play with wing backs. Don't see you. So all those things are true. And I think fair play to stuff with that. Because as a young man, there's an element. It's impossible not to feel, I don't know what the word is, a bit of, not animosity, but or bitterness, because you can't live your life with that, or resentment, but a bit of FU type thing. So you look and you see, are you doing the things I'm doing? He had Danny Teato, who he wanted to play with, and Danny's biggest fan, was a really good, much better wing back than I'll ever be, for sure. So I could buy into that. What I really didn't like about him was when I said to him, can I come and meet you? And I go to meet him and he leaves me waiting in a room for 20 minutes. I don't give a fuck who you are, who you think you are. If you're going to meet someone, at least have the respect to say, I'm here with you now, I'll be to him as I got this, da, da, da. I was in and out, and I thought you were an arsehole, you're not for me.
He said on the end of season review of that season that when he came in, he decided that every player was going to get a chance, and then you never played.
No, I was gone before he came in, and I don't subscribe to. I had everybody going, "Oh, Keegan's going to love you. You're his type of player." You know, I don't really. All that's true, and I would get that, and I would think, "Oh, this could be exciting." Yeah, I think there was a bit of scapegoatism as well. We've got a drink culture and I'm going to get rid of him. And listen, I went out and parties as much as everybody, but I wasn't a ringleader. Or there were no ringleaders. It was just a group camaraderie and team spirit. Yeah, listen, I look at what he done with England. He comes in, he loses the game, I'm going, I'm leaving. I just think he's a quitter. I've no time for him.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
That was Mark Kennedy speaking to me. The full interview, the 50-odd minute interview, is available now for Patreon backers. Just head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. You get all the extended versions of our interviews as we do them, plus bonus nostalgia episodes at the start of each week as well. You can also gift a subscription to the Patreon now to someone else if you're looking for a present for a City fan this Christmas. That might be a good idea. Details can be found at gift.bluemoonpodcast.com. Before we move too far away from the 90s, Dom, you were telling me that, because Kennedy in there talks about the team spirit and bumping into Jeff Whitley, you had an experience with Jeff Whitley right after Aguero scored the winner against QPR.
I did, yeah. I was reminded of it by Mark Kennedy saying there was like kisses and cuddles with Jeff Whitley, which didn't surprise me because outside the ground after it had all gone down that day, and just for context, I was going as a fan then, not trying to hold down gainful employment. I was leaving the ground and saw Jeff Whitley, and obviously everyone's head's on Mars at this point. And I just say, I've never met Jeff Whitley in my life, and just went, Jeff! And went and gave him a big hug. And for like a sort of bizarre stranger sort of making a beeline for him, he returned the hug, and he really committed to it as well. I remember it being a very sort of a firm embrace. Yeah.
Can you let go now, please, Jeff?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a hug come Heimlich manoeuvre. But yeah, doesn't surprise me. And it's nice to hear that Jeff Whitley is still giving out good hugs.
Massive hugs everywhere.
Yeah, massive hugs.
Excellent.
Can I just say as well, that Mark Kennedy interview, I thought it was absolutely mint. He's just so
he's a really nice guy, honestly.
Yeah, he just seems really kind of, you know, warm and open and honest. Well, perhaps not warm, but definitely honest about Keegan.
Yeah, one former manager that doesn't come out of it quite well, do they? But
it really does go downhill as far as Keegan's concerned, doesn't it? Quite rapidly.
He talks about like a family atmosphere. He talks about camaraderie and, you know, going out culture and everyone being, you know, they loved each other. And but Keegan, no, I didn't like him. He was a weak man. Just like, whoa, knives are out. Yeah, yeah. Quitter. It's just like, didn't give me the time of day, kept me waiting. It's like, yeah, he clearly holds a grudge, and I've got time for that.
Excellent. Right, time to look at the games with Palace and Juventus, because having stopped the rot, Higgy, how important is it now that they carry on the winning habit on Saturday? Because it kind of feels like the bats are square one if they don't.
Yeah, and that's the danger, isn't it? And Palace aren't too shabby. Got some great players, especially going forward.
We always say this of the Premier League, though, that they're not too shabby. But I would argue that Palace are of all the teams, they are one of the more shabby.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being. I watched them a bit the other night against. Who did he play? Help me out.
God, memorable encounter. Ipswich, was it?
No, they played. Was it Ipswich?
Palace beat Ipswich 1-0 in midweek, and they drew 1-1 with Newcastle at the weekend.
Correct.
I'm not Rain Man, I've just opened up Soccer Base.
No, fair enough. I could have done that myself, so sorry for being lazy, and cheers for helping me out. But,
no bother.
Yeah, they I don't know, they've just got. They just look like they've got some. Well, they have. They've got some good attacking players, and they can break quite quickly. And yeah, that doesn't.
That brings alarm bells at the moment, doesn't it? Yeah.
Especially with Aki being out, it's going to take some serious rallying from Diaz to get that back line in shape.
Of course, the most shabby team are Bayer Leverkusen, aren't they?
Oh God!
Come on.
That's quite, yeah, okay, we'll give you that.
No, we don't have to. I can edit that out, it's fine. where does the focus need to be this week, Dom? Because like with as much of them needing to get the back-to-back wins in the Premier League and start to kind of build a bit of momentum and good feeling again. If they don't get something from Juventus, then they're almost certainly, as it stands already, having to go through the playoff round in the Champions League. But they could be putting even that at jeopardy if they don't start picking up points soon.
I don't think they can pick and choose. I can't see a scenario where you might, and he still might rest, say, for example, asking De Bruyne to go back-to-back-to-back as soon as he's in the first team again is a big ask, but I can't see a scenario where they go to Palace, drop points, and go, oh, do you know what, though? Kevin and Jeremy got a rest. I can't see anything good coming out of dropping points at Palace and that makes them more likely to get a result at Juventus. I mean, you look at when the whole bad run started, it was actually that game at Tottenham where they rested a load of people, but then all the people they didn't want to get injured got injured anyway. So I just think one of the kind of the virtues that comes out of the sort of run City have been on is just win the next game. I think it really simplifies everything that they're not...
Just focus on the next one each time. Yeah.
You know that interview Diaz did after the Liverpool game where he just basically just kept saying Nottingham Forest at the reporter for about a minute? That, basically. And I know it's maybe not great TV or podcasts or whatever, wherever you listen to your interviews, but I think it is that. I think that... I think you're getting way ahead of yourself if you think you've beaten Nottingham Forest. Or how do we manage these games across multiple competitions, just
get into a habit.
Beat Palace, and then there's more chance of beating Juventus, and then there's more chance of beating United. And yeah, see where that takes you.
Dom mentioned De Bruyne there, Higgy. How much can they ask of him in these two games? Because obviously, just back from injury, he's just played 70-odd minutes against Forest. He was down on his haunches right before he came off, and then in his post-match interview, he didn't hint that there was any sort of injury, so he's clearly just knackered. Like, how much can they ask of him?
Who can say? I mean, you've just painted a picture there of all we really know. You've got to try and eke out everything that's available from him because he's so pivotal. The difference he makes, even just psychologically being on the pitch, not just for us, but the opposition, you know, it changes the way, as a defender, if you're seeing Kevin De Bruyne on the ball, it changes the way you're marking your man because you know that you're not just waiting for the play to come nearer before you have to be shirt tight or standoff or whatever it may be for whoever it is you're facing. I'm on a connotation, a tangent here, but basically, you know that his passing range alters how tight you have to mark. It changes the whole aspect from the defensive point of view, and equally from your attackers on the same team. You know you can make certain runs. You know you can go further, or you know he's going to spot you, and you know he can find you compared to other players. I mean, we've all had it, haven't we? Well, I have it sometimes when I've got the ball and you know certain players aren't capable of something, so you don't give them the ball in that position, and vice versa is true. You know, certain players are capable.
Is this why you never pass it back?
Yes. no, not at all, not at all. But do you know what I mean? He changes the whole mindset for both sets of players. And yeah, I must admit, when he was down on his haunches, I didn't see the interview. So I'm pleased by what you've just said. But Matt, I was just like, oh no, come on, seriously? Because he made such a difference to lose him straight away again.
I think he just needed oxygen, that was it.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, if we'd have lost him straight away again, I would have been very, very pessimistic about Palace. If De Bruyne plays against Palace, I think...
Very pessimistic.
Well, I think they get the game's there for the taking.
Yeah. Dom, Higgy's mentioned Ake. Akanji's probably not going to be available as well, although he seems a little bit closer to fitness than Ake does. Just when it looked like things were starting to get better for the centre-halves, this has happened. How do you see him doing this at the minute? Because like Walker, you got Walker and Lewis as fullback options. Gvardiol took it inside and alongside Diaz. So like is that it? Is it just that simple?
It's not great. Ake feels like a huge loss because I think as he showed, like coming back in against Salah at Anfield, he's a phenomenal defender. I mean, Kyle Walker has been hauled over the coals a little bit over recent weeks, but like when he came on at half-time, like his first involvement was like he almost let Milinkovic get the wrong side of him to score from a throw, and it's like, can you please just be aware that people are going to run off your shoulder as a fullback? It's like, and he knows that. You can make a case that Kyle Walker is the greatest right-back in Premier League history, but he doesn't look like someone who knows where he is half-time at the moment. But he's going to have to... I think... By the sounds of it, Akanji has been not really particularly fit for 2 months, but fitter than most. Mm. So I think Walker's going to have to play at Palace. And then you get into what you... Obviously, Diaz been there, like, covers over a multitude of cracks. But it's then what you do with the other side of the defence, because Gvardiol has had a bit of a tough time, but as he showed both sides of it against Forest, you know, he made a terrible mistake that nearly led to them scoring. But going forward in the first half, he was such a danger. He's a proper thoroughbred footballer. But in the current state he's in at the moment, do you want to ask him to play as a orthodox centre half and do all the stuff where he's a bit dicey and rob him of all the going forward stuff? But then if you have him going forward, you know, who plays centre back? That brings me on to if Guardiola plays with who's fit. If Guardiola plays centre back alongside Ruben Diaz, you're then asking Rico Lewis to come back in and play in another position, and then it's like, and then you're back into the realms of, oh, what is Rico Lewis? Is he a fullback? Is he a midfielder? It's really good in a team City.
Could you keep Lewis at right back? Play Simpson Pussy as a centre half alongside Diaz, because Diaz will be your leader and will be your control guy and kind of seize the day guy, and then you can keep Guardiola at left back.
But then in that shape that they like to do, where it's you end up with a back three in possession and someone pushes in, like who's going to play in the back three? Is it going to be Guardiola or is it going to be Lewis? Probably Guardiola, but he's not great at that at the moment. And I think, you know, obviously everyone thinks the world of Rico Lewis, but it's been a tough time for him, as it has been for everyone at City. It's actually been tough for him because he's been one of the ones who's fit, so he's had to keep playing. And being a young lad who can play in loads of different positions when you're in a team like City who are winning all their games, it can be great. It's like last season, it's like, oh, he looks $1 million in midfield. He's a right back. He's a holding midfielder. He's an attacking midfielder. Over the last month or so, I don't think I'm being unfair on him. He's looked like someone who's not quite good enough in several positions. And I'm not sure the answer for him right now, after he's played in midfield at Anfield, is to go back and play at left back again. And I wonder if the best shout at the weekend, if everyone is injured, we think is you play Simpson, Pussy, and Diaz at centre back and Guardiola at left back, with Walker being right back and being part of the back three as well. But yeah, Akanji and Ake are massive losses, because you looked at that back four on paper last night and thought, that's as good as the defence gets at the moment, and now half of them are injured again.
Yeah. One final thought before we get some predictions. In the Champions League against Juventus, it's played 2, lost 2. They need to win this. Otherwise, I know we haven't recorded the Christmas quiz yet, but I'm going to have to change one of the questions for one of the rounds. So there is a lot riding on this now. And I know you're both in the quiz for Christmas. So that's a nice little Easter egg for you to get thinking about what I could possibly be asking there.
Christmas Easter egg. That's festive.
Yeah.
Are you taskmastering the main quiz now?
I am. Yeah. I've had an idea for something I can do for one of the next year's ones that is really meta, but we'll get there if we get there. Charity bet time. We had a winner on last week's show. Unfortunately, it was in defeat at Anfield, but you can't have everything. That was Neil Atkinson's correct prediction. It takes the total raise this season to £715. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group, and they're raising money for Manchester Central Food Bank. Now, I realised, because late after the Forest game, that I got you to send your predictions over, you've both predicted the same scoreline for the Palace game. You've both gone for 2-1, so I'm going to let you fight it out for who has to change now, because there's no point putting the same bet on twice.
I'll change.
So what are you having then, Higgy?
3-2.
3-2 City, okay.
I was going to go 3-1, but you've taken that, so...
Yeah, I have taken 3-1. 3-2, so City is 22-1, so £220 if you are right. I've gone 3-1, as you've said. That's 12-1 and £120, leaving Dom with the original 2-1 prediction. That's 7-1 and £70.
Which was picked before half of the fence got injured, so I think Higgy might have a better shot.
Yeah, that is true as well. Juventus then, so what are you having for this one, Dom?
I'm having Juventus 0, Manchester City 2.
That is 9-1 and £90 if you're right. Higgy, over to you.
Juventus 2, Manchester City 2.
Excellent. Well, not excellent, but 16-1 anyway. £160 if you're right. I've met you in the middle and gone for a 2-1 City win, which is 15-2 and £75 if I'm right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. We are going to finish with the listeners' questions. Higgy, I'm not going to play the jingle in because, one, I've forgotten to load it into the session. And two, you're here in person anyway, so I didn't want to play your own voice back to you. That's a bit odd.
But I thought you were going to make him sing.
No, well, yeah, I can sing if you want. It's entirely your choice. But we did another one, didn't we? So we've got a third one now in the can to come.
Third and final installment. Yeah, just to prove that I can be weirdly irritating over a sustained period of time. if there's any doubt, let's cast it aside.
Well, that's for a future episode. Get in touch on Blue Sky or Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can also email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com. It looks like I've also fixed the contact form on the website, so you can head over to bluemoonpodcast.com and fill in the form there as well. John on the emails has been in touch to say, I keep hearing that City need to rebuild their squad starting in January. Who is out there that City need and could sign both in January and in the summer? And Dom, I'm going to chuck this one over to you because I hate transfer questions because I know nothing about players that don't play for City.
Okay, thanks for that.
Hospital pass for you there instead of Higgy.
Yeah, that obviously City are never usually too into doing business in January, but it does feel like there's maybe an acceptance at the club that they've maybe misread when this rebuild has happened. I think it was I think Sam in The Athletic had the piece this week saying they expect to rebuild in 2025 rather than 2024, and they're going to knock forward a bit. I mean, there's only so much you can do in a January window, and the obvious position would be Rodri's, but then it will still be a consideration. They've got to get someone who can play there but would also work when Rodri gets back. I think everyone saw with the whole Calvin Phillips experience that signing just pure cover for Rodri isn't great for anyone. You want it to be someone who can sort of go and play further forward. I mean, that was where the links with Rice and Guimaraes have come from in previous windows. So, I mean, the obvious one, not least because he replaced Rodri at half-time in the Euro 2024 final and was great, is Martin Zubimendi at Real Sociedad. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of. He was linked with Liverpool in the summer but decided to stay at Real Sociedad. There's reports, I think David Ornstein had it this week, who's very reliable in this sort of stuff, that he accepts he's going to move on from Real Sociedad, but it would be more likely in the summer than in the winter. That's not ideal for City, but the other side of that is he's a La Liga player, which means he's got a release clause, and Cheeky Bjerkestrand loves a release clause. The other two names been talked about have been Samuel Eriki Ricci from Torino, who's not long got in the Italy team, looks a really sort of classy operator. He's one of the tallest. He's probably the tallest of the like guys been linked with. So looks like more of a like for like for Rodri. But again, that does feed in the problem of when Rodri's back, what do you do with this very talented 23-year-old kid who might not have a place in the team? Obviously, Guardiola is great at reinventing what people do, so you never know. And the other one to add a bit of confusion is Ederson at Atalanta. People have often talked about, wouldn't it be great to see Ederson play midfield for City? Well, you might get your wish, but through more conventional means.
What an admin error there's on the cards there.
Yeah, massively so. So he was really good in the Atalanta team that won the Europa League last year. Not to do stereotypes, I've done it again, he's Brazilian, he's a bit more combative, there's a bit more of a Fernandinho type thing about him. He's also someone who could feasibly, when Rodri's back available, play a bit further forward and sort of snap into things, win second balls, all that good stuff that's not really been happening. So yeah, those are the three that have been most discussed. Other than that, I wouldn't like to hazard a guess on them. I mean, personally, I'd like them to get a... I think the area of need in the squad is they need someone an attacker who can play on the right wing and at centre forward. But, you know, there's not many of them knocking about.
Yeah. And final question for the show, I'm going to chuck over to you, Higgy, because Martin got in touch on the emails to say, I enjoyed the discussion the other week about your favourite pre-takeover goals. So along similar lines, what's the best quality goal you've seen City score in person, not on the telly, before the takeover?
Possibly just for technique and kind of circumstance at the time, that Niklas Jensen volley against Leeds. I think I've told the story on it before, but it was that, I think I was at uni at the time and I was back for, was it in December or something? Anyway, I didn't have a season ticket for whatever reason, and I was on a bus to town going through Rusholme. And it was approaching kickoff, and it just, you can see people kind of snaking down the side streets going to the game, and it just like, just didn't feel right at all. And I was just like, I can't go to town. I'm going to get off and go to the game, get a ticket off a tout. So went, got a ticket, plonked down in the north stand. I think it was 1-0, and it was just like one of the most peachy goals you're ever likely to see. Mm. Absolute, yeah, stunning strike.
Yeah, Dom, any that you'd like to chuck in? I mean, it's a great opener.
I genuinely think if we're talking like quality, I think that's the only correct answer, isn't it? It's, yeah, I was sat in the old Platt Lane family stand there. Lovely view, that one.
What do I get for that?
I guess all the other pre-takeover goals is you've got a few of Kincladze's greatest hits, haven't you? There's the West Ham in the Cup, Southampton, the famous one.
West Ham in the Cup has the greatest post noise.
Yeah.
It's got a fantastic post clunk. Yeah.
Yeah. City were so skint that they'd sold the inside of the posts. Yeah. Whatever was in there. Another one that comes to mind, but it can't have been like technically brilliant because of the player involved. But Alan Kernahan's like 35-yard chip against Leicester in the FA Cup, a game where a Norwegian got a hat-trick, Kari Ingebrigtsen, which is a, you know, Haaland's not going for a while. Wants to book his ideas up.
Yeah. Take a leaf out of Ingebrigtsen's book. Brings us to an end.
Home furnishings now, doesn't he, Kari Ingebrigtsen?
Does he?
Kari Ingebrigtsen's Kitchens of Distinction, I believe his company. Catch a little name there for you if you're after a handle.
I don't really know where to go with that. That's the end of this week's Blooming Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks also to my guests for this one, Chris Higginbottom.
Thanks for having me.
And Dom Farrell.
Thank you very much.
There is a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show coming up shortly. I was joined by City fan Harry Stopes, who picked out his five choices for the games that made me. You can get the full thing by signing up to our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. Christmas is coming up too, and if you're looking for something to get a City-supporting friend or family member, or indeed pet, then you can take a look at our merch store. Head over to shop.bluemoonpodcast.com if you want to have a look at what we have. I'll be back next week after the games with Palace and Juventus. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I actually have a very clear memory of the moment that I became a City fan. I already liked football. Like, I liked playing it, you know, on the street with other kids on our street, you know, at school or whatever, but I didn't really know anything about football as a professional sport. So I remember someone once telling me that so-and-so played for Liverpool and England. And I was confused because I was like, what about if Liverpool play against England? Like, that was the level of my knowledge of the actual organised sport of football. And we were having this conversation with other kids in my class, and everyone was sort of talking about who do they support. And pretty much everyone at the table was a United fan. And they were all talking about, aha, City, you're rubbish, aha, no one likes City. I remember thinking to myself, like, that's not fair. Someone has to stick up for City. Like, someone has to stick up for the underdog. So they were like, who do you support? And I was like, City. And then the following year, so when I went into year three, and there was this kid in my new class called Aiden, who was a massive City fan. And he's like, who do you support? And I'm like, City. And he goes, yeah, good, me too. Who's your favourite player? And I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, and he's like, well, mine's Gary Flitcroft. And I was like, oh, yeah, me too. Gary Flitcroft is my favourite player.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.